5 of us.
Good morning. Welcome to the House Committee on Higher Education, Innovation, and Workforce Development. It's Friday, February 19th. We have two bills and a report to hear today. A lot of people going a lot of places. So while we have the quorum, we're going to proceed and take advantage of that. And since Senator Gelster is here, we're going to start with a public hearing on Senate Bill 1558. Victoria, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1558A prohibits disclosure of records of college or university student health center, mental health center, or counseling center, or records of health professional retained by college or university to provide health care, mental health care, or counseling services to students, to other individuals, offices, or entities within, affiliated with, or acting on behalf of the college or university. It provides exceptions. Declares that health records, mental health records, or counseling records of students may not be considered student records by college or university. Declares an emergency, is effective on passage, has no fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and received no votes in the Senate, either in committee or on the floor.
Thank you, Victoria. I think based on my review of it last night, you may have just read nearly the entire bill, which is good. Senator Gelster, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Gelster. I'm the state senator from Albany and Corvallis. Given our reading of bills this session, I was very happy to have a two-paragraph bill, which perhaps helped it on the Senate floor. Unfortunately, my child welfare bill is about 80 pages long, and for that, I apologize in advance. This really is a simple bill about an important issue. You may recall last year an issue arose on a campus, and we read a lot about it in the media, where there was confusion about who has the authority over health records of students that seek care on a university campus. And there was a question about whether or not it was appropriate for this particular university to access a student's records as student records as opposed to health records. And the reason that that can happen is that when care is received in a university or college campus clinic, it's overseen by both FERPA rules and HIPAA rules. So the goal of this bill is very simple. It makes it clear that if I went to a clinic, or my daughter, which would be more appropriately, went to a clinic at Good Samaritan in Corvallis, she would have the same expectation of privacy as if she went to the clinic at Oregon State University. And it's an equivalency. If you read the language, it's may not release unless a non-campus person can release, and may release if a non-campus clinic can release. Important exception in here, under existing law for both campus and off-campus individuals, if a practitioner becomes aware that an individual is a risk or a threat to themselves or others, they have an affirmative responsibility and obligation to notify the appropriate authorities and take care of people. I want to really thank the university system, the private colleges, the community colleges. It's my understanding that just about every general counsel for an institution in the state looked at this. A special thanks to Debbie Koreski for helping to coordinate the communication with them, and Becca Goes from Oregon State University, who gave up a Saturday afternoon to go through the information. And that leads to the one other piece here that's really key, is that the legislation makes it very clear that the university itself, all of those other institutions of the university, and the counseling center or the health clinic are separate people. They are not the same person. And that's that question that becomes important, that the information can't flow without that appropriate release of information.
Thank you. Other questions for Senator Gelser? I think you did a good job explaining it. I appreciate it. There's no one else who has signed up to testify. I'd probably just call her by name and see if they want to, but I don't think that's necessary. Committee, are we ready to go?
Yes.
Looks like we are.
Thank you.
So we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1558 and open the work session on Senate Bill 1558. Representative Wisnant, please.
Mr. Chair, I move the committee approves to the floor. I move Senate Bill 558A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Wisnant has moved Senate Bill 1558A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion of the motion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. Senate 1558 heads to the floor. Given that Representative Leininger is a co-sponsor, we'll ask her to carry, and I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1558. I haven't yet seen Senator Haas, so...
He's right behind me.
Did he? Okay. Okay, excellent. We will start, we'll eagerly await his arrival and go back to our hearing on the STEM Investment Council. Mark and Lindsay, if you'd like to come forward, we'd appreciate that. I'll open up that informational hearing.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, I am Lindsay Capps, the acting Chief Education Officer and Education Policy Advisor to Governor Brown. I'm pleased to be here today to join in a presentation to give you an update on the work of the STEM Council, of which the Chief Education Office is responsible for convening. And we are anxiously awaiting the chair of our council to join in our report today, but we'll go ahead and get started for committee's purposes. So I'd like to begin today just by providing some context with regard to how the work around science, technology, engineering, and math education fits in, I think, to our larger agenda for education. First, as the governor has prioritized within our broader 40-40-20 strategy, she wants to work across communities with the legislature and among a number of partners to ensure that every student is graduating high school with a plan, whether that is heading on to college or other post-secondary job training or entering the world of work. And we know that students are engaged and empowered in their learning when they have choices for their future and when they can see a connection between their education and those opportunities. The governor believes as well that, as I think we all do, that learning ought to motivate, inspire, and connect students with real-world application. From classrooms to communities, we all, I think, want to foster opportunities for the next generation of critical thinkers, innovators, and doers. And a lot of the work that we're doing through the STEM Council and through our broader STEM and CTE work helps to set the stage for that. Go to the first slide. So as you all are aware, and many of people on this panel today have been involved in this, we were able to make investments in the last legislative session, doubling the dollars that are allocated to CTE and STEM. And that's an important piece of work that is ongoing. I think from the governor's perspective, there's more work to do to ensure that more of these opportunities are equitably distributed across our communities, most especially our rural and traditionally underserved communities. And that's currently not the case. Even as we see the great potential for both STEM and CTE leading to high-wage, high-demand careers across Oregon that not only position our students to thrive, but our communities to thrive. So that is a piece of the work that the STEM Council is taking up in developing its strategic plan. Just some quick background on the STEM Investment Council itself. The STEM Council plays a critical role in advising the Chief Education Officer on policy and investment priorities to deepen the connection between education and the workforce. The group is comprised of dedicated and thoughtful private sector industry leaders who are appointed by the Chief Education Officer. And in addition to this membership, the Council draws on the expertise of agencies across the cradle to career continuum, along with community and educator representatives through its subcommittee work. Moving forward, the Council will be creating an advisory committee to help work through the strategic plan, which Mark will talk a little bit more about. But in general, this, as you see on the slide up here, are the key objectives of the Council itself as it was created by House Bill 2636. You'll see the objectives that have been identified in terms of doubling the number of students that are proficient in math and science, as well as thinking along the learning continuum making sure that we have more post-secondary degree completion in STEM fields. When we think about these outcomes, we believe that these reflect just a slice of what we should be looking at or aspiring for as a state. Outcomes are critically important, and that's what we're focused on as we think about student-centered policy and investment. But we also have to be mindful of inputs and access. So we believe we need to be setting our sights high on paving the way for students to tap into their full potential and creating opportunities for them to expand their horizon. So with that, I believe our chair is here.
He is, and I think, as we talked about before, I'm going to make it a little, give him a chance to catch his breath, and we also have Senator Haas. I'm mindful of the fact that we're going to have a quorum problem in a little while, so just as you sit down, Mr. Pyro, I'm going to do something really unexpected and suggest that we're just going to put this part on pause for a moment, hear from Senator Haas on his bill so he can get back on his schedule, and then we don't lose our quorum, and then we'll be much more relaxed for you and continue the full discussion of this. So let's we're going to leave the informational meeting open and appreciate your flexibility. In the meantime, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1540. Senator Haas. And Victoria, if you can give us summary as Senator Haas comes forward.
Will do. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1548 directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to evaluate waiving tuition for students at community colleges and public universities who are pursuing mathematics-related degrees. Clarifies that HEC may consider multiple methodologies for increasing number of math majors in Oregon. Declares an emergency, is effective on passage, has a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, was voted out of the Senate Education Committee 7-0 and off the Senate floor 27-1.
Thank you for your flexibility, Senator Haas. Thank you, Victoria, for the summary. Senator Haas, please.
Thank you. Well, that was awkward.
We're juggling with our quorum and everything else. Yes, please.
Thank you, Chair Reed and distinguished members of the committee. Mark Haas from Washington County. Let me tell you the goal of this bill that's before you. Here's what a home run would look like for this bill. 5 or 10 years down the road, that Oregon's reputation of our universities is more focused on academics with a cornerstone maybe of mathematics. And that's important to the universities, I know. They care a lot about branding and reputation. And in addition to that, we have greater access for Oregon high school graduates who can, if they have the aptitude and the initiative, can find themselves going to one of our universities, majoring in mathematics or a math-related major, and have tuition waived. That is the home run here. There is some research and reasoning by looking at whether this is viable. And it's been interesting to me to look at some of the benefits that accrue from math-related study. There's research that shows that math majors make better lives and occupations and professions. For example, math majors tend to be better doctors, accountants, managers, business people, as a result of their background and training in logical thinking. And there's a fascinating study from Duke University that looked at 550,000 graduate entrance exams, kids who are people who are studying to be going to law school or graduate school. And they took all the results of those tests. And in that stretch of 18 years, those who did the best in graduate school exams were math majors. Further, there's obvious economic ties to study in math. Computer engineers are almost always math-related majors, and computer engineers by far pay the most to college graduates. And I think that makes a lot of sense for Oregon, given our increasingly technological economy that continues to prosper here. There is one disturbing trend that I saw in this research that shows that students in foreign countries are studying math at greater levels than they are in this country. And as a result, U.S. firms are importing more and more software designers, scientists from other countries. I was recently at the Intel R&D headquarters, which are located in Washington County. And you go in there, and there's a couple of thousand people. The average wage is about $150,000. And it looks like the United Nations. And I remember asking my host, how many of these people do you think are from Oregon? And she looked startled. She said, I don't think we have anybody from Oregon. In fact, the majority of people here aren't even from this country. And so that's discouraging, and I don't think that's good. And it's not a knock on Intel. They're a giant global concern, and they're trying to get the best people in the world. So this country, this state, needs to do a better job in churning out more scientists and trained engineers, and I think this is one way to go at that. So that's the impetus of this bill. That's why we're looking at it and asking the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to study this. We have a short but impressive history of this agency looking at these things. You might remember a few years ago, Heck studied Free Community College to see if that was viable. And out of that study, we passed the law, and some of those policy directives are now embedded in state law. Conversely, we asked Heck to look at this notion of pay it forward on college affordability. And Heck did look at that and just said, I don't know if this is going to work. And so that's kind of the spirit that I'm offering this bill up. If Heck comes back next year or later this year and says, well, Education Committee, interesting idea, but it's not going to fly, then that's fine, then we move on. But I think the important thing here is that we keep trying to look at innovative ways to do a better job getting more kids into college, getting more kids into degrees and out of college, and trying to continue looking at new ways for our university system to be responsive to our economy and to the families in Oregon. And for a long time in this state, there was none of that. And when there's no innovation and nobody continuing to look at ways to be better, then inertia becomes the policy driver. And I never want to go back to those days. So I appreciate and I'm very grateful for you considering this concept and this idea. And happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Senator. I think we will have questions. I think you were doing fine until you mentioned Duke. My vice chair, you know, visibly recoiled when you mentioned Duke. You should have just said a North Carolina university or something. But, Representative Wisnett, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It takes me 3 days to get over loss and a week to get over Duke loss. But, Senator, thank you for your leadership in education and advocacy for helping improve our education and bring down costs. I hope this is results in something good. I'm sure the heck. To get these kids in, at the college level, we've got to improve our K-12 math, and especially for children, ELL students in poverty, which is our population growing. And remember, this committee and I have worked hard to bring that subject to the attention of everyone. We must continue to focus on helping low-income students in poverty and ELL students improve in math. So that's good to give you these people to work in college. Thanks for bringing this forward.
We're going to be very quick here because we're going to lose our quorum in just a moment. Representative McEwen, please.
Thank you, Chair Reed. Senator Hess, I am delighted to have this bill before us for a number of reasons. And one of them, I will follow up on my good colleague, Representative Wisnant, on what's happening in K-12 education. As a former school board member and college access advisor for many, many, many years, the soapbox I have been on for a couple of decades now is encouraging high school kids not just to take what is required by the state to pass their math credential. It's to take that next level. Go take trig. Go take algebra 2. Go on to calculus. Whether you get an A in it or not is not the issue, and a lot of kids shy away because they're afraid that it's going to impact a GPA. Yeah. But learning those very high-level problem-solving skills is something that lifelong has a fantastic impact, whether you end up being a math major or not. But going into any type of science education or whatever it is you do in your life, that is such a valuable tool for a student to have. And we don't do a very good job in this state of encouraging students to take that next step. And I think there's room to improve there. And the other issue I just want to address, which your bill kind of skirts around, is the dearth of math teachers that we have in Oregon. We don't have enough. In my community, we are having a great deal of trouble finding a math teacher to come teach in our high school. So that's another area that kind of fits into this whole picture of how we encourage people to go into the field of math. The difficulty is, as you said, a math major can go make $150,000 in industry. As a math teacher, they're not going to make that much. So it's really hard when you go through that rigorous college coursework to encourage people to come back and use those skills to train our young people and have a more global impact in doing exactly what you're trying to do, which is have a very well-educated workforce that has those math skills that we all know. That universal language across the globe is incredibly important. And so I'm delighted you brought the bill. I think it's a topic we need to continue to revisit for all of those reasons, and it's critical to us having a healthy workforce and playing in a global economy. So thank you so much for bringing this bill.
Thank you, Representative. We're going to hear from Hans Bernard very quickly, and then I want to get the bill out before we lose our quorum, please.
Hans. Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, Hans Bernard with the University of Oregon, here today on behalf of all the seven public universities in support of the bill. We have discussed the bill and really appreciate Senator Haas's approach in terms of sending this idea to the HEC for further study, and would note our particular support for the language in the bill that contemplates how universities would be financially compensated for the math majors that we would bring in, but certainly appreciate the opportunity to study a nexus between industry and our universities, and appreciate Senator Haas bringing the bill forward. So just wanted to weigh in and give our support, and I know you're short on time, so happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bernard. Representative Reardon, 30 seconds or less.
For sake of time, go ahead.
Thank you, Representative. Anything else? No one else who's signed up, so I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1540 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1540. Representative Wisdom, please.
Chair Reed, I move Senate Bill 1540A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Wisdom. Has moved Senate Bill 1540A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion of the motion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. Senate Bill 1540 heads to the floor. Senator Haas and I talked about Representative Johnson being a carrier, so we'll pursue that path and adjust if needed. In the meantime, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1540. We're going to lose our quorum now.
We apologize for other
obligations. I'm staying, and I think Representative Reardon is staying as well.
Representative Gallegos will be back.
And Representative Gallegos is coming back in a little bit, too. So the plus is now we can be very relaxed. And you've got a chance to catch your breath, and now we can
downstairs thinking, well, I have time, so
you're all set now, so
great.
So back to our regularly scheduled programming. Thank you for your flexibility, and we're ready to hear from you. Thanks.
This is not lack of interest, by the way.
That's right. It's the Ways and Means Committee meeting. It's the other. It's a short session. That's the challenge.
Representative Reed, picking up where we left off, I think I was about to hand it over to our chair, but I would just commend the committee. I think you just had a great conversation exactly in line with what we're talking about today. So I think we're thinking in much the same way. So with that, I'll hand it over to the chair of our STEM Investment Council, Jim Pyro.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Jim Pyro. I'm Portland General Electric, and I chair the STEM Investment Council. I want to give you an update on the work we've all been doing over the last 18 months, and it's been a lot of work and a lot of exciting work that we've accomplished. You guys already covered that slide, so let's go into this slide here. This gives you some of the important information of why this is an important topic. STEM workers drive the economic growth, and they are a key to a thriving economy. This data just shows the STEM wages versus non-STEM job wages, and you can see there the significant difference in wages, which is really important for our economy. Let's go to the next slide. This is, I think, the point that was being made at the last presentation, is that we're not graduating enough kids in STEM degrees. And this is a study back a while back, but it's from a class of 2005 that they followed through 2011. And out of the kids going into high school, less than 2% graduated with a STEM degree. And if you look at that number against the national average, it's about half the national average. If you look at the demand in the market, we did look at some demand. I think the Oregon Talent Council is updating that information. But overall, there's about 70,000 STEM jobs over the next 10 years. That works out to about 7,000 per year. About half are new jobs, half are replacement retirement jobs. And we're only producing 1,000 Oregonians to fill those jobs, a huge loss and opportunity for our Oregonian students. And so this has really been the basis of the work we've been trying to accomplish. If you go to the next slide. So what we've been doing as a STEM Council is we organized into three subcommittees to get our work done. And we have a great subcommittee, great subcommittees that have been doing really hard work, and we've been getting a lot of support from advisors. advisors throughout the community. But they're organized in three areas. First, strategic planning. Second, data and metrics. And third, communication and advocacy, because it is all three of these that are critical to make this successful. On the strategic plan side, we have completed a draft. We released that to the Oregon Business Council. We really appreciate the work that Oregon Business Council supported us. We had the Oregon Community Foundation that helps write the plan, pay for writing the plan. And it is now out for comment. And we are going around the state later this year to get comments and feedback through focus groups to get input from both our regional communities as well as our communities of color. It really is important that we look at this through an equity lens. The data I showed you on the previous page is just average. When you look at communities of color and children of poverty, it's much, much worse. And so we've released the strategic plan. We're going to hopefully target for a release of that in May. That's going to be during STEM week, and hopefully you can all attend and be a part of that. The Data and Metrics Committee is doing a lot of good work on collecting data, identifying what are STEM jobs, making sure that we have the information and can track the outcomes that we need to achieve. And then finally, the need for advocacy, because many parents don't understand what the STEM opportunity is for their children. The strategic plan, you can find this on the web if you just do a search on Oregon STEM strategic plan. But the strategic plan vision is really, really important. And we only segmented a part of the plan, but I think it's important to read the vision in total because it doesn't do justice this one sentence. And I just want to read it because it's important. It says, build an inclusive, sustainable, innovative-based economy by reimagining and transforming how we educate and empower individuals and communities. Oregons of all races, economic status, and locations will develop the fundamental STEM enabled innovation skills and mindset necessary to fully contribute to an increased complex and technologically rich global society, address high demand workforce and industry needs, improve the prosperity of all individuals in the communities across the state, and be creative lifelong learners who can adapt to changing social and economic conditions. Pretty powerful vision that we see it for, and it really is this whole idea of lifelong learners in the area of science, technology, engineering, and math. The goals we laid out here, I'm not going to go through those. You can see them there. They're very important. The second one I would just point you to is that the STEM Council is very keen on making sure that we look at this through the equity lens. Clearly, our children of color and poverty are not getting the same opportunities. We really need to focus our resources in that area to bring them along so they have the opportunities in the future. Next slide is really about outcomes and metrics, and we've been very intentional about looking at outcomes and making sure that we measure ourselves along the way. And this is just a pictorial of really the continuum of a child's education. When we track these metrics, and we are going to start tracking these metrics, we're working on exactly what they will be, but we are going to track them from an equity perspective so that we can see that we're making a difference in those sectors. And so along the way, we will be tracking outcomes, making sure that children are on the right path so they can go to college or pursue jobs with STEM backgrounds. Go to the next page. Talk a little bit about the STEM hubs. It's something that was introduced in 2013. It's really our backbone for really pushing STEM out to our communities. It really is a unique opportunity to create a collaborative environment with all our communities in terms of educators, workforce boards, economic development organizations, out-of-school programs, and business and industry and civic leaders. And really the successful hubs have brought all those constituents together, and they're working closely to try to determine what are the outcomes they want for their community in the area of science, technology, engineering, and math. We believe that this is the way it's going to be successful, doing it at the grassroots level, bringing the local community together and being collaborative. And so far, we're seeing really positive signs, and communities have come together. Some are farther along than others. The initial set of hubs, we had about 6 hubs. They are doing well. I think they're still learning on how to collaborate and bring people together, but they're talking about the right things, and they're coming up with best practices that can be shared across the state.
Maybe a naive question. Are they geographically centered, or how are they organized?
Geographically centered, and you'll see on the next slide where they are. The first 6 that came out there's 3 up in the Portland, or 2 in the Portland metro area, 1 on the coast, 1 down south in Douglas, 1 in central Oregon, and 1 farther east. Those were the initial. There were other hubs that were formed. They just weren't ready for prime time, and they were still developing their collaborative groups. They were funded in the 2013-2015 period. They've been up and running. They really are the backbone to really creating the conversation around what does the community need, what are the job opportunities, and how do we increase the better outcomes in those areas. So it's been really positive. We've had some fits and starts with each organization, but I think they're starting to get their wind behind them. If you look at the next slide, this is really the next set of funding that's happened. This came out of the last legislative session. And as you see here, we have $5 million that was dedicated to the STEM hubs. That will allow us to grow it. So we did grow the STEM hubs just recently. Five more were funded. Again, geographically diverse, getting more of the state covered. We're really excited about this. It's creating a much better network, and the new hubs are learning from the existing hubs, and we're bringing that network together to learn from each other and what best practices are. On the grant side, we are still in the RFP process. A lot of work has been going into this area. I really want to appreciate the work the Oregon Department of Education, Salam Noor, and Laura Roach. They've been working this process. We've got a number of different grant programs out there really to identify programs that can be successful and scalable. I think it's really important that we identify things that are successful, but then also can be scaled across the state. And we're going to watch that and create outcomes to measure those grants to see what outcomes we produce. And then finally, in terms of post-secondary success, $2 million was allocated out to the post-secondary system to really support children of color and equity and children of poverty to really keep them in the STEM degrees. And that program is underway. I don't know if have they got that funding out yet, or is it still being decided and worked? Do you know the answer to that?
Chair Reed and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mark Lewis. Yes, the HEC is currently working on releasing that RFP. There has been some challenges with moving money from the Department of Education into the budget of HEC in order for them to have the authority necessary to push that RFP out the door. So there are post-secondary institutions have been informed and know this is coming, and so there's been some groundwork already laid by the HEC.
So excited about that. And as part of our research, we saw a number of really good programs in the post-secondary space, specifically at Oregon State with their Bridge program, but other programs that are supporting children of color and poverty, keeping them in the engineering and STEM fields. And that's really exciting to see, and it has been very successful. This is the picture of all the hubs now that have been funded. You can see we have a wide coverage of the state. There's a couple areas that aren't covered yet, and we continue to have conversations in those areas. And we might see more hubs as they become more regionally focused, but this is what we have funded today and are excited about what's coming.
Is that forward. Really – Lynn Benton does not have one? Am I reading that correctly?
Chair Reed, yes.
That's surprising to me.
Yeah, with Oregon State there.
We had expected
and LBCC
a submission from that area, and several members of those communities, various leaders and districts are very interested. We expect that they will be – there's a number of different STEM-related and CTE-related activities, so there's a lot of work going on in that regard. But we did not receive an application from that area.
Should I – am I reading it too much into it? Part of me thinks that from your answer, maybe that's that there's so many things going on already that there's a challenge in coordinating it into a single entity. It seems like the other places probably have a lot less advantages in infrastructure and assets and so on than relative to Lynn Benton. What's going on? Why are they not there?
That would be one explanation, I believe.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Understood. All right. Sort of taking off track.
Yeah. So that really completes our update on where we are, making really good progress as a STEM Council. Really appreciate the leadership of all the various organizations that have come together. The Chief Education Office has been extremely supportive. Mark's been a great staffer to help us move our strategy along, and we're excited about where we are. We have much more work to do to create the outcomes. The other question that comes up a lot is the CTE-STEM interface, and we really see a very blurring of the lines between CTE and STEM. They are really a nexus. It is how children learn. Whether they go ultimately into a CTE profession or they go on to a STEM degree, in the early ages, it's hard to tell. And what we do believe is action learning is critical for these children to get hands-on experiences, and we're really encouraged by the CTE revitalization grants and making sure that those grants have a STEM component to this so they are integrated. So the children aren't kind of directed one way or the other, but they have the range of opportunities for them so that they can pursue whatever career they want. And so we're really encouraged. We continue to have conversations with the CTE folks and really talking about how do we bring this together in a focus effort offer so the child gets a full education and action learning experience.
That's a great summary. Thank you. I appreciate your recognition of the overlap there. Representative Reardon has been a really tireless champion on CTE stuff as well. So I have some questions, but I don't want to jump the gun. Representative Nierman or Representative Reardon? Representative Reardon, please. Go ahead.
Excuse me. Well, thank you. And once again, Mr. Pyro, thank you for your dedication to this work. And I know you have pretty much full-time job already, so,
pretty much.
But really, really appreciate it. And your breadth of knowledge that you bring. I think this is fantastic, everything that's happening. Just a little question. We talk about, developing that, that well-rounded, team player, innovative, creative person. And I personally think there's an overlap between STEM, CTE, and the music and performing arts. And sometimes we talk about STEAM instead of STEM. Do you have thoughts on that you could share, and maybe how we could pull those together in a more, or maybe just totally disagree?
No, I don't disagree, but I'm not sure I'm the expert at really trying to figure out how to integrate those together. Maybe you have a comment on this, Lindsay.
Well, maybe I can add just to that question a little bit, because I had one that was kind of similar to that. And at the beginning of your presentation, you talked about sort of STEM jobs, and that made me sort of think, what's the definition of that? Because, it'd be harder probably for me to think of a job that doesn't have some element of STEM, particularly in the current world.
Or STEM and CTE.
Yeah, so I think I'm just asking another version of your same question.
Chair Reed, Representative Reardon, I'll take a quick shot at the question on two levels. The first is just, I think, from the standpoint of learning. I think when we think about CTE STEM or other disciplines, this is really applied learning. There's a set of skills and learning processes that are involved that I think can run the gamut of the types of curriculum and elective coursework, et cetera, that students have access to. I think one of the important things that we have to grapple with as a state is how we maintain focus. And we will have an opportunity, I think, through the building of a state plan to meet the federal Every Student Succeeds Act requirements, which now has an arts and design component. And I think we need to think that through, certainly with regard to the STEM Investment Council. We're continuing our focus around sort of math, science, and engineering as a way of making sure that we're meeting some of the workforce priorities going forward. But there's no question that looking at art and creative design as a component of that will be critically important, and continuing to think about our methodology around learning. So, Mark, do you want to add anything to that?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, having spent much of my life contemplating questions like this around the integration of arts and sciences, and having come from a highly technical technical background working in the aerospace industry, I can say that engineering is a creative field, and that and sciences as well. I think there's a strong interaction between how we think about STEM, and we need to, there's a public perception of STEM as being very sort of stodgy, very linear, very in the box, and that has not been my experience at all. Having worked in the field in a number of different capacities, there's a huge creative element, and we see scientists, the best engineers, being making really creative, intuitive leaps that go well beyond the bounds of pure logic. And so I think that the STEM conversation, without getting in an acronym war, I think if we focus on the attributes that we're looking for critical thinkers, problem solvers, those who are creative, who are willing to take risks, who are willing to think beyond the usual, then I think there's definitely a lot of room for us to consider those together.
One other follow-up, Chair Reed and the members of the committee. We have struggled with this whole idea of what is the definition of a STEM job. And so we've been working with Brookings Institute, or Brookings Institute has been taking on this challenge. And so we have identified all the jobs, and there are many jobs that have components of STEM. And more, to your point, Chair Reed, many jobs have to have a STEM component to it. And so we are trying to break that down and get better data, better metrics on what those jobs are. Do you want to add anything to the Brookings study?
Yeah, the Brookings study was very interesting, and we've adopted that as a council. And essentially, it looked at a number of different things, high STEM jobs. They looked at the actual occupation, not just the occupation codes, but they went out and spoke with people in those jobs themselves, and then sort of analyzed the data. So pipe fitters, in their definition, is a STEM job, is a high STEM job. It turns out in their study, 50% of the STEM jobs available in this economy do not require a four-year degree. And so that's a real push in the direction that we're heading as well, recognizing that traditionally labeled CTE professions are also very, very highly skilled areas that require a great deal of professional background and knowledge as well. So the Brookings Institute and their study is moving us in that direction, and we've adopted that. I think the work ahead is defining then what is a STEM degree or certificate, and that gets a little more challenging. And to Senator Hass's bill, and looking at sort of those highly mathematical degrees. Well, an economics degree is highly mathematical. And so that, I think, would fall into my definition of a STEM degree, although it's probably not traditionally considered as such.
Yeah, that's a really interesting observation. I appreciate that point, too, about STEM jobs, however we define them, aren't necessarily ones that require a four-year degree. That's a good point, too. So maybe to take that a little bit further, this notion of sort of the definitions and boundaries, is interested in the way you're talking about some of the specific things you're doing in developing, I may be using the wrong words, curricula and specific sort of intervention stuff. To what degree do you think those are appropriately confined, again, to the definitions of STEM sort of classes, and to what degree do they make sense to be integrated into other disciplines?
Chair Reed, I'm not quite sure I understand the
nature
of your question.
If you've developed a specific kind of curriculum, is it going to be just for the math classes or the science classes, or are there opportunities, or should there be things that then go into the art class or go into another class that isn't initially thought of as a STEM kind of discipline? And where do those boundaries exist or flex, or what should they look like?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, that's a delightful question. The nature of STEM itself is
delightful. Thank you.
The nature of STEM itself is very much around integration. If we look at and ask the professionals out in these fields, when are you doing math? When are you doing science? When are you doing engineering? When are you using technology? There is no boundaries that exist there. The boundaries that exist are ones that we've put in place in our education system itself, in particular disciplines, and there is variation across those disciplines. What STEM is recognizing is that the skill sets that are required in terms of the ways of thinking, the ways of knowing, embracing ignorance, taking risks, the possibility of iteration and optimization in your designs, embracing failure as a critical element of actually learning. Nothing is learned until you push the boundaries to where things start, to where your knowing starts to break apart. So, to the extent that's how we're thinking about STEM is in this integrative way, then why shouldn't we be exploring issues of social importance, such as ethics around genetically modified organisms in a biology class? Why shouldn't we be integrating art with math, since those are very, very closely aligned? So for us, I think we see that this conversation goes well beyond trying to box us into particular domains to the integrated nature of this through applied learning.
That's good to hear. Does that mean that you have those faculty and experts and so on from disciplines that initially don't feel like STEM as part of that effort?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, in our STEM hubs, and many of our STEM hubs have branded themselves STEAM hubs as well, noting the inclusion of other disciplines. Many of the examples that we see in terms of those STEM stars out in the field, which we have a tremendous number of highly skilled educators, highly effective educators, who are doing just that and extending the learning beyond a particular domain to explore the interconnectedness of the various disciplines. And we see that. I think our biggest barrier is perhaps the isolation of those STEM stars to the broader system, which is where our strategy with STEM hubs comes into play, where we're getting the good ideas flowing and accelerating that spread of those ideas throughout the general ecosystem.
Keep going unless someone else stops me. A couple more questions. So early on, one of your slides distinguished or contrasted Oregon's success relative to other states. I can guess that funding might be a part of that, but outside of that, to what do you attribute the other states' success, and what do we need to get better on?
Chair Reed,
you're on a roll here, Mark.
People are looking at me. Yeah. In that regard, I think that a couple of things are in play here. Part of it is certainly working toward having a coherent vision to drive the changes that we seek in our educational system. And I think that over the last couple of years, with the establishment of the Chief Education Office, with the establishment of the STEM Investment Council, and other actions taken by this legislative body to support the education system as a whole, we're moving in that direction. And some of the states that I've worked with and followed are not addressing issues regarding STEM in the same way that we are. We're taking an internal look, and it's harder at first to really have this money, you know, in state agencies. Many states have committees in STEM that lie in the funding goes through a nonprofit or goes through the higher education and is driven there rather than through the kind of more centralized leadership that we're taking here. And that may have put us off to a slower start, but ultimately I think that our gains are going to be much more extensive than other states' efforts.
I feel like the end of your answer got a little closer to where I'm aiming. I would be surprised if other states, if they're being honest, would describe themselves as necessarily having coherent visions. I'm guessing they probably have the same kinds of challenges that we have, at least in terms of lots of actors and so on. So do you think that ultimately we should go in that direction of nonprofit structures? And what are the sort of specific things that you look at in other states and say that's something we need to evaluate or pursue potentially?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, there is some, given that we have a very complex education system as a whole, moving such a behemoth and changing the cultures and changing the actions requires us to be thinking along many fronts. How do we establish the cultures of risk-taking within buildings? How do we support our educators and give them permission to take such risks? How do we break down the walls between community and classroom, between higher education and economic development and workforce, or those transition points in our system between middle school and high school, or high school into the post-secondary? Those are the things that we're tackling as a system. I think one of the biggest challenges from an investment perspective is that to be looking at these not as programs, but looking at it in terms of systems change and looking at aspects of sustainability that get us long-term focus around the change that we seek, and not, I guess, falling into the traps of chasing small aspects of programs. We're program rich and systems poor is one way of describing it.
I like that description. Thank you. Spiram Scaps, do you miss anything in that answer?
The only thing I would add, Chair and members of the committee, is that we are trying to identify those STEM stars. There are some wonderful teachers and educators out there who have really captured the imagination of their students. They've got them excited about STEM, and we're trying to find those stars and use them as an example to help coach and lead other educators down this path. We also have some great superintendents and some great principals. It has to start at the top, but showing those examples where we are having great successes is wonderful, and I think that's the model that we are trying to expose and let people know that they can make a difference. So that's really important, and Lindsay's trying to bring that community together to share those ideas, to really support them, because it is risky, and it is different for them, and they're not necessarily prepared to do that. Part of what we're doing is, in terms of investments, is supporting the educators, because if they don't have those skills and tools, they're not going to be successful with the students. So it is a journey, but I will tell you that we have some wonderful educators who are making a difference out there, and they feel relatively frustrated because they want to move further and faster, but the system isn't quite ready to do that.
I'm sure that's true. Thanks. Representative Rudin, were you raising your hand a minute ago?
Well, I just wanted to ask if you're aware of a program called Say Yes Buffalo.
He's also writing it down.
I'd like to send something, because I think it's a program I learned about last November. I went back to Florida for a White House convening, and they were brought up this program, and I think it complements what you're doing. It might be some nuggets in there that you find that would help address other needs. But one of the things that it focused on was, two things. One was they created a goal. So every student was promised, you do X, Y, and Z, you can go to college. And that was all tied together. Then they did a beautiful job of tying together all the support services that a student needs. So the goal, and then how do you, because it seems so different than when I was a kid, when basically, you know, go to school, kid, study, be good, you're going to be successful. And kids today just seem to need so much more. And how do you tie together all the, you know, the need for counseling, social services, even legal services, the information, data sharing that's required to help kids. So it's a very broad look at it. I'd like to send it to you, if you don't mind, and just ask you to reflect on it a little bit and maybe compare it to what you're doing. There may be, well, you know, there's always some incremental thing that might be done.
So, sounds like it might also be sort of a more academically focused version of, like, the individual development accounts, some of the programs that happen there. That's good.
Perhaps.
Yeah, so. Good. Okay. Thank you. Looking to this end just to see if there's anything. Do you want to say something, Mr. Capps, please?
Just the last piece, Chair Reed, members of the committee. And by the way, since I have not formally introduced myself, for the record, Lindsay Capps, Acting Chief Education Officer. Just to bring this back full circle, certainly we see system innovation happening through the work of the STEM hubs and our overall STEM strategies that's being developed. I think bringing it back to the work of this legislature in 2015 and House Bill 3072, we have, in many respects, an investment strategy in place. And I think the STEM strategic plan builds upon that and thinks about that on a 5 to 10 year trajectory, even further out. I think one of the things we struggle with as a state is how do we put resource behind that innovative thinking and the network of leadership that's emerging across the state. And just the figure that I love to use is, you know, we spend about $35 million right now on both CTE and STEM. And if you look just to our neighbors to the north, just on secondary CTE, it's $400 million. If you wanted to talk about California, we're billions. And so it isn't all about resource and funding, but I think to the extent that we do have a sound strategy that's been developed through this body and with the leadership of the STEM Investment Council and other advisory groups and the Talent Council and others that are taking part in this, I think that's sort of the step forward, is how do we begin to get some dedicated funding behind this to really help this work flourish across all communities and make sure that the learning opportunity is available to all kids.
So I think you largely answered the question I was going to ask, but I want to ask it just in case there's anything that you didn't say in that answer, and that is just what do you want this committee and people who will be in the next session to be thinking about
in the interim. Funding is one obvious component, but are there other pieces we should be paying attention to, reading, listening to? What do you want us thinking about?
Chair Reed, that's a delightful question. Here's a start, and I think this would be a great conversation for us to continue to have as we've worked collectively together just in this last session around House Bill 3072, among other initiatives. I think what we need to start thinking more deeply about is the, as Jim mentioned, obviously the continued integration of CTE STEM together. That's some work that we can do from an implementation standpoint and through the work that we can convene through the STEM Investment Council and at the agency level. But I think that some of the work ahead is going to be thinking about how we bring CT STEM into a broader workforce strategy. And I think that's a potential area where I'm sure this committee might have some interest in a place where having some more conversation would be beneficial for the state.
Very good. Thank you.
I do have one comment or question, I don't know. And I apologize, I had to step out and testify to another committee. But it really gets back to Representative McEwen's question earlier this morning about teachers, you know, teacher salaries. And I just wondered, as you talk about system change, do you envision that we will, in the university systems, move toward the salary, reflect the salaries that, say, we ended up doing with business schools? In other words, business faculty get a heck of a lot more than a social science professor. And is that something that we can anticipate, do you think?
You've stumped them, Representative.
Yeah, I think
all
so.
Looking at each other.
Who's going to answer that?
I'll jump into the fray. Chair Reed, Representative Gagos. I think when we think about system capacity, whether that's, as Representative Reardon talked about, supports for students, there's probably a equally important conversation around how we talk about supports for educators, and I would put that in that sort of bucket for, I think, further conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Okay. Interesting question.
Yeah. Thank you for the question.
Yeah.
I think we may have exhausted the questions for the moment. We appreciate the update, and expect we'll have you back when you're ready, and maybe before you're ready, because we have interest too. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks. Unless there's anything else to come before the committee, we are not going to meet on Monday. We will meet on Wednesday. We have taken care of our Senate bills, so we'll be back to our sort of regular 8:30 on Wednesday. Anything else? Don't see anything? We're adjourned. Thank you.
All right.
We're adjourned. Thank you.
All right.
Anything?